they're made in Salzburg, which is a big center for where Mozart mostly lived, and he's the hero of the town, you know. So I don't know how this all came about, but it's a very popular. You can read all about it in German. Oh, here it is. It's in English even. But I won't bore you with that. We had a practice period in Switzerland, and Sister Theresia was the shuso. So she practiced side by side with me. She sat on one side of the altar and I sat on the other, and she did half the talks and half the services and I did the other half. We put on our things and our things together upstairs in the little Dokusan room. And she was also my jisha, so she brought me coffee early in the morning in a big tray, and tapped on the door, barely could hear the little tap, and there she'd be with a big smile on her face. And then she'd walk me over to the zendo and walk me back, and then make sure that I had what I needed when we were eating. It became a very sweet relationship. And we often walked out, and I walked out with her through the snow to the animals that she takes care of. There are 3 sheep, 2 goats, 5 little tiny miniature black pigs, and 1 great big pink pig named Anton. The pigs are Claire and Francis, are the parents, of course. She's a Franciscan nun. I've forgotten what the babies are named. Clarissa, Samson, and I forget what else. They are all completely tame. And she has this huge field for them and a beautiful little barn. And when she goes, then they all come out, and she has always food, and she feeds them by putting her hand in their mouths. I have pictures. I'll bring them next week. And then she takes them for a walk, because the pigs are in one place, and the sheep are way out, about half a mile away through the forest. So we all go walking out with 5 little black pigs and a great big pink pig following us all the way through the forest. In the snow.
Do they walk half a step before each breath? Yeah.
No, they don't. But they're completely, acclimated to having affection and attention. They're lovely. Vanya keeps them there because he wants to expose as many people as possible to the fact that animals are real and that food comes from a real place, and he makes sure that people know that pork chops come from somebody named Anton, who has a lot of character and is really, really a wonderful person. Vanya, that's one of Vanya's big campaigns at the moment, is animal rights. So Theresia is a part of that whole process, because she takes care of them and is really central to the whole operation. So we did a lot of sitting and a lot of breaks and some studying. It was very peaceful. Not like a session, because there was a lot of extra time in there, so time to take walks, time to talk in the evening. At dinner, we could talk. So all day long, we'd be quiet, and then all of a sudden at dinner, it would be lots and lots of conversation.
She still wears her habit underneath the
She wears her habit. She does. She has worn the habit since she was 19 years old, and she's now 50. And it's a complete one. It's a black dress. It's a white thing that goes over her head and her neck with little teeny buttons, and then a sort of thin peplum. So this part is all white. And then a black cape. And she says the kids think she's Batman when they come and visit her. I guess the cape flies out behind. When she's in Innsbruck, where her monastery is, she works with drug addicts, young drug addicts, and rides a motorcycle. And her veil is always flying out behind her, just like, you know, she was flying. Very interesting, very, very progressive thinking. To see her in that medieval outfit, in a medieval kind of commitment that she takes very seriously. And there she is in Zen, wearing an okesa over the habit, so that she's, she says there's no difference. But then when she talks about the beliefs of the monastery, she talks about the narrow view, the sort of by-the-book view that she feels is misunderstanding, and then the experience, which is what defines. So I hope you all have a chance to meet her. I keep trying to lure her over here. I think it would be great for her to see America. And there'll be another one next year, so keep that in the back of your mind. Also another one at Poreg in Austria. So many possibilities. There are questions? Samia?
How is it different to than our the sessions that we do with the sitting all day, just talking at the end of the week? What was your experience
of the practice period? Well, there are just two sits in the morning before breakfast. They're all 30-minute sits. And then after breakfast, there's a break, and then there's a work period, and then there are three sittings before lunch. After lunch, there's a very two-hour break, and then there's study period, tea, and a discussion. Sister Tracia led them half the time, and I led them the other half. Over some interesting subject. And then one more sitting and the talky supper. Mm-hmm. And then an hour break and then two more sittings before bed. So there's a lot of sitting, actually, before each meal. But in between, there's a lot of free time, free enough time to take walks, take walks with the piggies and take naps and read. I did a lot of reading. It felt like a real vacation to me. You know, my favorite kind. I got to sit a lot and be with people who are sitting. So they're mostly wonderful people. We had a mini sesshin in the middle of it. One weekend we had Friday night to Sunday after lunch, and that was straight sitting all the way through. And it does, it feels different when you do it that way. That was kind of a flop. There was a man who came who, in the question period in the very beginning of it, asked about spirituality and spiritual practice and what happens if things come up, like you lose your job or your kid is in trouble or your wife is in the hospital. And I said, oh, you take care of those things first. Of course you do. That's your spiritual practice. And he left because actually his wife was in the hospital. So we lost him, and we lost a real young guy who was into Tai Chi and Taoism and just didn't like sitting at all, really. And then a young couple came, very odd young couple, who sat one sit and then took me aside and asked me what we were doing. I told them I didn't know. I said, it's an experience, just try it and see. And they said, we need a map. I said, I'm sorry, there's no map. And so they left. That's it. So I felt kind of like a flop with that. But on the other hand, I didn't know what else to say. So
arrow, you are here.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a shoe-set ceremony at the end. Yeah.
When they asked for a map, did you offer them a scripture of any sort, or is that not your style?
There isn't any.
Fair enough.
There's lots of material, but I always say it's like reading about swimming if you've never been in the water. It doesn't make sense. You just have to get right in there and see what it feels like, and then there'll be a lot of questions. But before that, none of it computes, which is alarming to a lot of people, because we want to feel more like we have control. And it's the first thing sometimes for us that gives us the reality that we have much less control than we think we do. Which is a joy as well as a terrifying prospect.
And so did you have a lot of snow, and was it up high in the mountains, surrounded by mountains?
Oh, I'll bring the pictures. It is so incredibly beautiful there. It's the way Switzerland is supposed to look. It's these high, pointy mountains and layers of them. And they're all covered with snow in various ways, you know. They're very steep and very high, and Felsentor is across the lake from them and sitting on a mountain. So you look down, far, far down at this beautiful lake, and then from the lake rise up these white, snowy, sharp peaks. So it's just stunning. And it changes all day long, the colors. Sometimes it's all black and white if the sky is gray. Then the trees on the mountains are blotches of black, and the snow is really white. And then suddenly it'll all change, and you know the sun will go down, and it'll all be pink. It's just gorgeous. I think people come there sometimes just for the view. One of the managers complains. He says, everybody wants to sit on the side where you can look out and see the mountains at breakfast. He said, it's a Zen place. You're supposed to be attending to eating your food, not looking at the view. But of course we look at the view. So where are we in this book?
Last time we did repetition on page 55.
Okay.
Zen excitement on 57. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Mm-hmm.
I think we did God-given. What else when we did?
Mm-hmm. Right, Carolyn.
Yep.
Took us through the
right.
That section.
Mistakes and practices. Right.
Which is what page, Julian?
Oh, 71.
Oh, 71. Right. We're in a new section. Oh, it's just the fly. Shall we read it?
Mistakes in practice. It is when your practice is rather greedy that you become discouraged with it, so you should be grateful that you have a sign or warning signal to show you this point in your practice.
That's the introduction. There are several cool ways of practice which you should understand. Usually when you practice Zazen, you become very idealistic and you set up an ideal or goal which you strive to attain and fulfill. But as I have often said, this is absurd. When you are idealistic, you have some gaining ideas within yourself. By the time you attain your ideal or goal, your gaining ideal will create another ideal. So as long as your practice is based on a gaining idea, and you practice Zazen in an idealistic way, you will have no time actually to attain your ideal. Moreover, you will be sacrificing the meat of your practice. Because your attainment is always ahead, you will always be sacrificing now for some ideal in the future. You end up with nothing. This is absurd. It is not adequate practice at all. But even worse than this idealistic attitude is to practice Zazen in competition with someone else. This is a poor, shabby kind of practice.
Our Soto way puts an emphasis on Shikantaza, or just sitting. Actually, we do not have any particular name for our practice. When we practice Zazen, we just practice it. And whether we find joy in our practice or not, we just do it. Even though we are sleepy, and we are tired of practicing Zazen, of repeating the same thing day after day, even so, we continue our practice. Whether or not someone encourages our practice, we just do it.
Even when you practice Zazen alone without a teacher, I think you will find some way to tell whether your practice is adequate or not. When you are tired of sitting, or when you are disgusted with your practice, you should recognize this as a warning signal. You become discouraged with your practice when your practice has been idealistic. You have some gaining idea in your practice, and it is not pure enough. It is when your practice is rather greedy that you become discouraged with it. So you should be grateful that you have a sign or a warning signal to show you the weak point in your practice. At that time, forgetting all about your mistake and renewing your way, you can resume your original practice. This is a very important point.
Thank you.
So as long as you continue your practice, you're quite safe, but as it is very difficult to continue, you must find some way to encourage yourself. As it is hard to encourage yourself without becoming involved in some poor kind of practice, to continue our pure practice by yourself may be rather difficult. This is why we have a teacher. With your teacher, you'll correct your practice. Of course, you'll have a very hard time with the teacher, but even so, you'll always be safe from the wrong practice.
Most Zen Buddhist priests have had a difficult time with their masters. When they talk about the difficulties, you may think that without this kind of hardship, you cannot practice Zazen. This is not true. Whether you have difficulties in your practice or not, as long as you continue it, you have pure practice in its true sense. Even when you are not aware of it, you have it. So Dogen Zenji said, "Do not think you will necessarily be aware of your own enlightenment. Whether or not you are aware of it, you have your own true enlightenment within your practice."
Another mistake would be to practice for the sake of the joy you find in it. Actually, when your practice is involved in a feeling of joy, it is not in very good shape either. Of course, this is not poor practice. but compared to the true practice, it is not so good. In Hinayana Buddhism, practice is classified in four ways. The best way is just to do it without having any joy in it, not even spiritual joy. This way is just to do it, forgetting your physical and mental feelings, forgetting all about yourself in your practice. This is the fourth stage, or the highest stage. The next highest stage is to have just physical joy in your practice. At this stage, you find some pleasure in practice. You will practice because of the pleasure you find in it. In the second stage, you have both mental and physical joy, or good feeling. These two middle stages are stages in which you practice Dzogchen because you feel good in your practice. The first stage is when you have no thinking and no curiosity in your practice. These four stages also apply to our Mahayana practice, and the highest is just the practice.
If you find some difficulty in your practice, that is the warning that you have some wrong idea, so you have to be careful. But do not give up your practice. Continue it, knowing your weakness. Here, there is no gaining idea. Here, there is no fixed idea of attainment. You do not say, this is enlightenment, or that is not right practice. Even in wrong practice, when you realize it and continue, there is right practice. Our practice cannot be perfect, but without being discouraged by this, we should continue it. This is the secret of practice.
And if you want to find some encouragement in your discouragement, getting tired of practice is itself the encouragement. You encourage yourself when you get tired of it. When you do not want to do it, that is the warning signal. It is like having a toothache when your teeth are not so good. When you feel some pain in your teeth, you go to the dentist. That is our way.
The cause of conflict is some fixed idea or one-sided idea. When everyone knows the value of pure practice, we will have little conflict in our world. This is the secret of our practice in Dogen Zenji's way. Dogen repeats this point in his book Shobogenzo, A Treasury of the True Dharma.
If you understand the cause of conflict as some fixed or one-sided idea, you can find meaning in various practices without being caught by any of them. If you do not realize this point, you will be easily caught by some particular way, and you will say, this is enlightenment, this is perfect practice, this is our way. The rest of the ways are not perfect. This is the best way. This is a big mistake. There is no particular way in true practice. You should find your own way, and you should know what kind of practice you have right now. Knowing both the advantages and disadvantages of some special practice, you can practice that special way without danger. You can practice that special way, but if you have a one-sided attitude, you will ignore the disadvantage of the practice, emphasizing its good part. Eventually, you will discover the worst side of the practice and become discouraged when it is too late. This is silly. We should be grateful that the ancient teachers pointed out this mistake.
It sounds fairly simple, but it's so hard to do. So hard to sit without having some kind of gaining idea. It's why we do it so many times, why we do it a lot, because until we really get into it, there's always a gaining idea. I know in some Zen centers there is also competition. There isn't much competition in mostly Koban's groups, because Koban emphasized so strongly that there's nothing to gain by it. But competition with oneself is very easy to develop, and to very hard to recognize even. No. Well, I didn't have such a good sit yesterday, but now I'm going to have a really good sit. Or, oh, shoot, that was a bad sit I just did. What a shame. Or I'm a bad person. You know, we can do all kinds of things with it that are just our mind playing. It's just thoughts. Irrelevant thoughts. The relevance is in actually doing what we're doing. Being present and completely whole, alive, breathing, and well. Partly it's our conditioning. We're raised to be competitive with each other and with ourselves too, to be a good girl and a good boy, and be disappointed in ourselves when we're not. And if we're good, we try really hard to be good. And if we're naughty children, then we try to circumvent the powers that are pushing us. But it's all just this pushing and pulling. And Zazen is about simply sitting and breathing where we are. That's all. Just this, nothing else. Because there is nothing else. So it's very good advice. No fixed ideas, no one-sided idea. And the only way to practice it is to practice it. Just keep coming back over and over again. Oh, all this fancy thinking is nothing but fancy thinking. This is what's true. Sister Theresia, at the very last day, had a shuso ceremony, a very formal one, and she was very scared all week. It's extremely intimidating to sit up in front of everybody and offer yourself for questions, testing questions to see how your practice is. And she had a big staff, crashed it down when she answered each question, you know, bam. And I asked the last question, and I asked her a thoughty kind of question. She talked all week about oneness, how everything is one, is connected, and how powerful that feels, and what a wonderful idea that is, and etc. And so I said, you talk often about oneness, but we say in Zen also, not one, not two. What would you say about that? She took her pad and she went, bam, right here, right now, she said. It was great. She was so good. She was so good. Just right on, every time. Most of it was in German, so I couldn't hear what it was, but that one was English. So it's 8, I think. It's 5 o'clock in my body. 5 o'clock in the morning. So I think we should end this.